Welcome to our special coverage of COVID-19. This is COVID-19 Conversation. Usually in this hour, you would hear Freakonomics radio, and you'll hear that next week. There is so much going on, and things are moving fast here in Utah with regard to the coronavirus pandemic. We're going to take the hour to get you up to date, and you can send in your question as well by email to upraxis@gmail.com, upraxis@gmail.com. We're going to be talking with representatives from the governor's office. We'll be talking with health department officials, and we'll be welcoming in, once again, State Senator Lyle Hilliard. And as I mentioned, your question as well. If you have a question on COVID-19 and the latest news and what you should be doing, here's your opportunity to ask various officials. It's COVID-19 Conversation, a special presentation on Utah Public Radio. Here's our email, upraxis@gmail.com, upraxis@gmail.com. And we'll be talking with Senator Hilliard. We'll also be talking with Lloyd Berenson from the Bear River Health Department. And we'll be talking as well with Gordon Larson, who's Director of Policy at the in the Office of the Governor. All of those guests on with us this hour, and your questions as well, upraxis@gmail.com, upraxis@gmail.com. Some of the news happening, the governor has issued a travel advisory. We got word now we have some new projections nationally, internationally, and state by state with some good news, projections for the range of deaths that perhaps less than had been projected. So maybe some of the, all of these social distancing restrictions are paying off. We don't know. We can't let up our guard, but hopefully things will be happening. Also, questions about should I wear a mask or not? All of those and many, many more. We welcome in Senator Lyle Hilliard. Thanks for joining us.
Glad to be with you, Tom.
We're glad to have you with us. Lloyd Berenson, I believe, is with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on with us. And do we have, I've lost your name. Do we have Gordon on with us?
Gordon Lawson.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Yep, I'm here.
You're with the governor and the policy director.
Correct. Happy to be here.
Okay. Senator Hilliard, maybe the high points of what's going on. Things are moving fast.
Well, you know, there's really two things that we're focusing on. The number one thing is protecting people's health. And I think I've been really impressed, I think, with how the governor's office has given a directive, and I think people, by and large, are obeying it. I know there's some pressure about whether it ought to be an order or a directive, but I think we've shown so far that the directive is working well. And we're getting the results that we want. It's slowing down, we hope, but this is an unknown thing. We have no idea whether something will pop up or not. I like what you said, Tom. We need to keep our guard up. And so that's the first focus that we're doing on. The second focus is we want to do it in such a way that we don't destroy our businesses. We don't want everyone to go back in their homes and lock themselves in a closet to make sure no problems happen. Because our economy has to go on. We need workers. We need people spending and doing that in a very guarded position. I think that's what we're working towards to get that done. But I think it's I'm getting a lot of calls. I really appreciate this radio program because I'm getting a lot of calls on a lot of different areas that I think Gordon can address and Lloyd can address. Lloyd more from a local northern Utah perspective, and Gordon, I think, can give you a statewide perspective of where the governor's office wants to go and trying to go. And I think all those are good news for us to hear.
Well, we'll address those as we go along. I understand, Lloyd Berenson, you have to leave us at about 10:20.
Yes, that's all right. Sorry about that.
So, we'd appreciate you coming on with us. So we're going to direct some questions. We're going to concentrate on you for a little bit here while we have you. So from the perspective of the health department, just first of all, how are things going in general?
Well, I mean, obviously we've got a difficult task that we're dealing with, but the thing that I'm most optimistic about is that we do see a flattening of the curve. For a long time, we've been watching modeling and so forth that indicates that, hey, we're headed in this direction. And there's some people who have kind of said, well, that modeling's not been good because the numbers are not showing the significance that the model originally showed. Well, actually, I think the model has served a great purpose. It gives us a target to keep improving upon, which keeps adjusting down because of what I would call the extraordinary support of our community and the self-responsibility of the people of Utah. In the northern part of the state, I have personally witnessed anywhere from big box stores to restaurants and other businesses that are doing amazing jobs being creative on how they can deliver their business while still maintaining social distancing and so forth. And so there's a lot to be positive about. And the other thing that I think that is the good news is that I think we're seeing that effect as we go forward. As Senator Hilliard mentioned, the directive that the governor has put out has been extremely good for us to all follow. We haven't all put the same kinds of orders out. Depends on where we live in the state and kind of our uniquenesses. But we are seeing, I think, amazing cooperation from our communities overall, and that's probably the thing that I have just been so impressed with. Now, that doesn't mean we don't have some problems and things that are going on, but it has been pretty remarkable to watch. Now, there will still be challenges. Local health departments will continue to monitor and track disease in order to promote healthy lifestyles and prevent disease and disability and protect the public. But we will need a higher level of scrutiny and self-responsibility even up until there's a vaccine for COVID-19. So we've got a ways to go that way, but there's no reason why we can't get businesses up and functioning and be fairly prescriptive in how we do that. And right now that's one of our key goals is to do that.
What's, of course, it's hard to predict, but what's the timing, do we think, on that?
Well, yeah, I wish I had a perfect ability to forecast that. As I look at several models that are used across the United States, and then particularly the one at the University of Utah, some would suggest that we, with either from now until about the 23rd or so of April, that we are seeing a flattening and that we're hitting the top of that curve. We think by most models that by the time we get into the end of June, that curve will almost have gotten completely flat again. We're crossing our fingers that COVID, that this is another SARS disease that actually is similar to SARS-1. So this is really SARS-2, which is what COVID-19 is. And that is something that has been seasonal or proven to be seasonal historically. And so if it follows that same path, that'll be good news. And then it gives us hopefully a little bit of a reprieve so we can continue to sharpen our tools, have more interventions that can go into place, get things maybe normalized a little bit in the business community and go forward that way.
So under that scenario, we'd have to kind of keep our guard up, right, and expect maybe a return in the fall?
Yeah, and I think the keeping the guard up is extremely important. There are good habits that we've learned through this that we don't necessarily need to reduce. That doesn't mean we aren't going to be a social people again. I think there's ways of doing that, but there are certainly some good hygiene habits and things like that that have made us go to a higher level of consciousness. That's really a good thing to maybe carry forward and will help us in regardless of whether it's any kind of influenza-like illness or other communicable diseases, just great habits to be able to carry forward with.
And as you mentioned, people might wonder, well, the some of the models early on were kind of doomsday, but now a little better. But model will give output according to the input, right? So this is actually good news. Maybe we are flattening the curve.
I think it is. I really credit people's self-responsibility. The more that we can get that kind of cooperation, I think that's where the governor's been trying to go with this. The more we can have that, the more effective we're going to be.
I had a question. Well, let me privilege listeners, and we're throwing this out. By the way, you're listening to a special presentation on Utah Public Radio, COVID Conversations. A lot of things happening, and we have with us Senator Lyle Hilliard, we have Gordon Larson from the Governor's Office, Policy Director, and we have Lloyd Berenson from Bear River Health Department. And we are opening the email for you, for your questions. I hope that you'll get your question or comment in. upraccess@gmail.com, upraccess@gmail.com. Here's from Jessica. Jessica says, my Hello, my name is Jessica Jones. I'm a nursing student at Utah State University. I'm curious how the Utah healthcare system will ultimately change long-term due to the COVID-19 outbreak. Viruses are going to continue to mutate and arise, and bacteria are going to continue to become more resistant to our treatments. So what measures will be made? Will there be more state evaluations, hand-washing evaluators, more frequent use of PPE? How do we plan on keeping the healthcare system from becoming overwhelmed? That's Jessica. I'll direct that to Lloyd Berenson.
Yeah, I think the key to that answer is preparation. One of the things where we've maybe found ourselves a little delinquent is, for example, in the amount of PPE that we have available to us. In the future, I would think that we'll learn from this, and we'll when she asks about, you know, what the future direction is, we'll make sure that we have the necessary things on hand so that in the event we run into these kinds of situations, we'll have that capability to protect that frontline group of folks who are taking care of those that might then saturate the hospital system. The other thing is we have plans of how we do surge capacity for when we do maybe overwhelm our hospitals. Those will be brought up and standing now, but there may be ways to have those plans in place long-term so that, you know, the surge is less of a need to define at the moment, but is in place and we can go ahead and respond to it. And she's right about all the various things. I think that the hospitals do a scrupulous job in trying to make sure that they hand wash and clean everything, disinfect. They're excellent at that. They're dealing with those folks, however, that come in and that are they're trying to help them with their particular disease or issue, and sometimes those things are communicable. And so those are the challenges they have, and they make sure that they cross every T and dot every I in making sure that those places are as safe as possible. And those things, I think, we'll learn from and become even better at as we go forward.
By the way,
I think Gordon can give you a statewide perspective. I appreciate what you said about here locally, but I think Gordon could give you a statewide perspective of what they're trying to do to answer that question.
Excellent. Gordon Larson.
Sure. No, first I should say I really appreciate Lloyd's great work and the work of the other 12 local health departments throughout the state. They're really the detectives in this effort, right? They're the ones doing what we call contact tracing. So when we have a confirmed case of COVID-19, Lloyd and his staff are the ones who are meeting with that person, reviewing any place they've been over the past several days since they started showing symptoms, and then going out and talking to anybody that they had contact with who may be at risk of exposure. And that really is the key. From where we're at right now, the key is massive testing and contact tracing, in addition to the hygiene and the social distancing that Lloyd mentioned. That's how some of the Asian nations that we've seen, South Korea in particular, who've been able to respond much more quickly with massive testing and the contact tracing, which allows them to find the cases and test them and isolate them and allow their economy to get back to full operation. And so that's where we're at now. We have about 1,000 Utah State employees who have a little bit more bandwidth now than they did prior to the crisis, who are helping people like Lloyd and his staff and our other health departments to do that detective work of finding people and then going and pushing them towards the testing. We've had remarkable partners in the private sector, Intermountain and the University of Utah and ARUP, which is a big testing laboratory that's headquartered here in Utah. And they've allowed us, and then some of our partners in Silicon Slopes as well, have all come to the table and allowed us to massively expand our testing capability. And again, that really is the key to being able to get out of this, is being able to push people to get tested, isolate and quarantine them, and prevent, get that transmission rate down so that there's you're isolated, you're not infecting other people. And I think Utah, as Lloyd said, I think Utah is ahead of the curve in that sense, which is encouraging.
Excellent. I'll follow up on testing here in just a bit. While we have Lloyd Berenson, I want to ask you just a couple of questions just on, you know, personal hygiene. Oh, by the way, first of all, I kind of glossed over this And so in her question, Jessica mentions PPE. You knew what that was, Lloyd. I had to Google it. So maybe some listeners don't know that. Personal protective equipment.
Yes. Sorry about that.
You're
in our acronym world. We don't think about what we're saying sometimes.
Yeah. I was not on, but personal protective equipment. Thank you. Speaking of personal protective equipment, national guidelines, not a strict requirement, but nationally they're saying you might want to wear a mask. What's the guidance in Northern Utah and in Utah?
Well, CDC has come out with some direction, and we certainly want to advocate what the CDC is telling us. We try to give them a little bit more education in terms of what that really means. So if you determine to wear a mask, one of the things you have to have is a little bit of self-discipline. We know that we're still going to touch surfaces and so forth with our hands. And when we have a mask on, we tend to bring our hands to our face more often. And because of that, you actually have another risk that might happen to you when you're actually making contact with other surfaces and then bringing that to your face more frequently. So if we can do that and be disciplined with masks and not bring hands to our face and so forth, they really can be a help and a protection, not only for ourselves but for others. If we have a bad habit and we can't overcome that, a mask may be more of a problem for us than a help. And so each person really needs to evaluate that as they go forward. But certainly if we can be self-disciplined, it's definitely a help for us to wear them when we go out.
I wonder, Lloyd Berntsen, if you're worried about, human nature. I wonder about this. People, I think people are being very good. How long can we help people be very good and in their social distancing?
That's a great question. I look at the weather warming up. People want to get out. We're worried about our economic issues. We also have to worry about our mental health, our social health, all of those kinds of things. So one of the things that we're trying to do, we're looking prescriptively at some of the places that we've currently got closed, and we're saying, all right, what can we do to maybe have some limited access and get these businesses back open so that people can enjoy things? Let me give you an example. If we go to the gym and we want to use some of their facilities, we may not be able to do team sports and things like that there, but is there a way to spread out exercise equipment to keep them clean in between every use and do things by appointment and check temperatures of the doors and put a whole bunch of things in place so that people can be fairly assured that when they utilize these places, they're going to be protected? Those are kind of the innovative things that we have an advisory committee we put together here locally in two areas. One is recreational facilities. The other is with our restaurant and food service folks. And that's actually what they're trying to come up with for us right now in Northern Utah. And if those are a valuable, if that's of help, we certainly want to pass on that information to anybody at the state or we can glean off things that they're learning on how we get these folks back in business. But we've got to really pay attention to our mental health and our capability to move forward and do other things. There has to be a carrot at the end of the road, and we have to be able to see that so that we can still get compliance from folks. So,
well, I know you have to get going here. Lloyd Berntsen, thank you so much.
Hey, thank you. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it very much. Lloyd Berntsen's with the Bear River Health Department. For the rest of the hour, we will have Senator Lyle Hilliard remaining with us and Gordon Larson with the Governor's Office, Policy Director there. And we're encouraging your questions. You're listening to a special presentation on Utah Public Radio, COVID Conversations. And you can get your question by email to us, upraxis@gmail.com, upraxis@gmail.com. You could call us as well, 800-826-1495, 800-826-1495. We do have a question from Chris in St. George. He wants to know about testing, and we'll do that question and continue this conversation following this break.
This is Mark Innocenti.
And I'm Lori Rogman.
We're both professors at Utah State University. I've been here in Cache Valley since 1977.
Well, I've been in Cache Valley longer, but I've been in Cache Valley and at Utah State University since 1990.
And I've been a fan of UPR probably since the sometime in the 80s. I learned about UPR and have been a regular listener since then.
I lived in Logan in the 70s, and I was driving around Cache Valley, and I would have been listening to the radio in my little Volkswagen. The news that comes from NPR that we hear is trustworthy news, Morning Edition, and then All Things Considered.
We are extending a challenge. We are both in the Americo Jones College of Education and Human Services up on campus. We're going to especially challenge people in the college to donate. Let's do some fundraising for UPR and keep UPR strong.
You depend on Utah Public Radio for reliable news programming. Give us a donation right now at upr.org to make possible that programming you come to UPR for every day. Donate now at upr.org.
You're listening to a special presentation on Utah Public Radio, COVID Conversation. And we're talking with Utah State Senator Lyle Hilliard and with Gordon Larson with the Utah State Governor's Office, Policy Director there. Some news out, travel restrictions, travel guidelines. We have the latest projections out. You heard this on NPR earlier from the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation. I looked up Utah, and we've been referring to this nationally. According to the Institute, Utah's current projection projected a peak on April 26th. Total projected deaths, 163. Of course, one is terrible, but we wanted to flatten the curve. It looks like we are flattening the curve according to these projections. Of course, I have to keep the pressure on. So, Senator Hilliard, what's top of mind for you as we've gone through this conversation this hour?
Well, let me tell you, I'm getting three questions really a lot. Number one is the mask. I think Lloyd answered that question. The other two is, what is this travel advisory? Are we going to have highway patrolmen at the border stopping and checking everybody going in? The other one I'm getting is, what is an essential business? So if the governor says shut down or stay at home, only essential business, what do you mean by that? And those last two questions, I'm going to give to Gordon, because I think Gordon can answer those very well. What does this travel advisory mean? And number two, what is an essential business?
All right. Yes. Gordon Larson, over to you. Those are two excellent questions.
Sure. Thanks, Senator Hilliard. I'll start with the travel question. It's important to clarify that it's not a restriction. We're following the lead of other states that have come up with innovative ways of monitoring people who are coming into the state. We can be as vigilant as possible with our own residents here, but if we still have people coming in who are bringing the disease from, particularly from areas that have high outbreaks, California, Washington, other states, then that negates the effort that we have. So it's not a restriction, it's a declaration, and the way it will work is for those who arrive at the Salt Lake International Airport, and again, that's actually a very small number of people now. We've had about a 90% drop in the number of people flying into Utah right now. But for that small population coming in, they would be asked when they arrive at the airport, perhaps eventually even when they're on the plane itself, sort of like a customs declaration when you land after international travel. They'd be asked to complete a small form with some questions about where they're coming from, what their ultimate destination is, where they have been over the last couple of weeks, and what their health status is. Some of those things that would allow us to identify if they have been exposed or if they are at a higher risk. And then the same thing that would happen when you're coming in on a number of Utah's freeways, certainly on the interstates and on a few others. Now, it's important to clarify Highway 91 here between Idaho and Utah. That's not going to be one that will require this simply because that's a tight-knit community there, a lot of people that are working on one side of the border and living on the other. But what would happen on the others, on the freeways, on the interstates, when you come into Utah, there's what we call geofencing. So it will push to your cell phone a little message asking you to complete a form. And of course, you won't do that while you're driving, but when you stop to get gas or to rest stop or whatnot, then you would complete. It would take you to an online form, and you would complete that same questionnaire online, again, so that we can have a better handle on who's coming in, where they've been, and if they're at a higher risk for contracting COVID-19. So now, the second question about essential businesses, that's one that the governor deliberately decided. We don't want to get in the business of saying these are the important businesses and these that are not. Some states have gone down that road. But if you look at the language in his directive, his Stay Safe, Stay Home directive, It instructs people to and businesses to find creative ways to telework if that's realistic. If it's not realistic given your business, then find ways to social distance within that workplace environment. So it leaves to the individual and to the business to decide what's essential. But our hope is, and Lloyd emphasized this, and Senator Hilliard has emphasized this, that the approach is to give Utah residents the information and encourage them to make a good decision and to think creatively about how can we find ways to appropriately social distance, again, teleworking if possible. But we didn't get in the business of trying to define what an essential business is.
So the governor's directive, stay home, stay safe, by and large, as far as you can tell, is that working? Is there need to implement stricter measures?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And I think Lloyd spoke to this a little bit earlier. The hard data that we're looking at show that it by and large is working. We have data that shows that the way people travel to different destinations, the retail and recreation is down 41%, grocery and pharmacy travel is down, transit is down, way down 44%, workplace travel is down 40%, and on down the list. A recent survey earlier this week showed that 94% of Utahns say that they have limited their social interactions based on the coronavirus. 71% have changed their travel plans. 66% have purchased more food and supplies so they don't have to go out as often. And 62% has started working from home. So when you look at those numbers and you compare them with some of our neighboring states that have the little more draconian shelter-in-place orders, we're about the same place. They're very comparable, which says that Utahns are responding, and that's encouraging. You know, you can always find exceptions to that and people who are not taking it seriously, and that's disappointing and frustrating, but you can find those exceptions elsewhere, even in the shelter-in-place states as well. So it's important also to mention that this was sort of the approach the governor took was we'll issue this directive as a floor. This is a bare minimum. You should be doing these things, and then we will defer to the 13 local health departments, including Lloyd's and Cache Valley, based on local circumstances, issue more stringent orders and directions if necessary. And certainly most of those counties along the Wasatch Front are more populous counties have taken that step. And then some of our much more rural counties have not because they have not seen the cases or spread yet. At some point they may decide to do that. But in any case, we are seeing large compliance with the governor's directive, and that's encouraging.
Yeah, that is encouraging. I want to follow up just briefly on the travel rules. So we're using the term geofenced. Can you explain that a little more in depth? What happens if, and this is I-15 at Idaho and Arizona borders, I-80 Nevada and Wyoming, I-84 from Idaho, I-70 from Colorado, U.S. Highway 491 near Monticello, and U.S. Highway 89 by Kanab, I think, are the roads. So what happens exactly?
Yeah, good question, and I'm glad you named all those off because people wonder what ports of entry. It's not every single road. Like I said, we don't have 91, and there's a few others that are less traveled roads, but it's those nine major ones. And it's the same technology if you've ever received an Amber Alert on your phone, right? So it's not a text message. It's not an email, but it allows the public health authorities, and in this case, the Utah Department of Transportation, to push to your phone this notification that will pop up as soon as you cross in on that border. Now, we realize up front that if you're someone who travels in and out a lot, that may be kind of obnoxious or frustrating, and we just sort of in advance ask for the public's patience and understanding. We think the benefits of this will outweigh some of that inconvenience. But yes, it'll pop up on your phone as soon as you cross into the state on those nine ports of entry.
Okay, and that'll
prompt. Tom, I have a question for him.
Yes.
What happens if I ignore it or if I give false information? What happens to me?
Yeah, another good question. So it's not like we're going to have highway patrolmen that are going to chase you down and force you to do it. This is all voluntary compliance, and it goes back to the discussion about hygiene and social distancing. We're really just counting on Utah residents to be sort of responsible citizens and help us be able to get our handle on this. And so, again, it is voluntary compliance. There's not repercussions if you don't fill it out, but we certainly hope that people will.
Okay.
What if I go to another state? If I cross the border and go I-15 up to Idaho, will I have the same thing by Idaho?
Yeah, I don't believe that Idaho has that yet. I know other states have gone that route. I don't believe that our neighboring states do, but I'd have to check on that and get back to you. But there are certainly other states that have done use similar technologies in similar ways to be able to have people coming in, fill out some kind of form and allow health authorities to know that they're there and where they've been in the past.
I have a question, another question on travel. Is Utah generally discouraging, travel at this point or not? Is this the geofencing will handle everything?
Well, the governor has said for Utah residents, he continues to encourage people to, as his directive said, stay safe, stay home. That doesn't mean you can't, walk around the block or go out within your neighborhood. But we do discourage people from non-essential travel. So, if you've got a trip planned to southern Utah, save that for maybe later in the year. And I realize that's discouraging and frustrating for some people, particularly those maybe who have second homes. But every time you get out and you travel, that means you got to fill up with gas. It means you probably have to take an extra trip to the grocery store. It means you're going to have more of these interactions that help the virus spread. And so our state parks are now open only to local residents within that county. The national parks are closed invasive species reasons. The boat ramps to Lake Powell are closed now. We have seen a dramatic decrease in travel into the state, as well as travel within the state, and again, that's a good thing. It's discouraging, and you get a little bit cabin fever. But the idea is to avoid those social interactions that allow the virus to spread.
I want to get in this.
Tom, I have another question for you.
Go ahead.
What does your modeling show? Is this going to be over in a week, a month? What does your modeling and the work that you're doing there show for the people of the state of Utah?
Yeah, the model that I think Lloyd mentioned earlier is out of the University of Washington, which predicts that at the end of this month, those models are all really subject to behavior and they change every day. There's modeling that the University of Utah is working on in Intermountain Healthcare that may be a little bit different than what that University of Washington study is showing. The key metric that we're tracking is the transmission rate. And that refers to, for example, if the transmission rate is 2 throughout the state, that means that on average, everybody who has the virus is giving it to 2 additional people. And so the whole goal is to get that transmission rate down to 1 and then below 1, so that if I've got the virus, I'm transmitting it to only one other person or 0.7 people or the lower that we get that transmission rate down, that's the key metric, and that's how we get a handle on this and then start driving the overall cases down. And we're making progress on that, but that goes back to what I mentioned earlier about the heavy testing and contact tracing and being able to isolate people who have the virus. So I wish I had a better answer for you. I know some epidemiologists say that from this kind of the start of our first cases about a month ago that we could expect in 12 weeks to be able to end those social distancing measures, 8 weeks perhaps is the goal. I don't want to say that's what's going to happen. I think again that the focus should be on the sooner that we can do the heavy testing and contact tracing, the sooner we can bend that curve down and loosen up on the economy and allow the isolation of just those cases that are confirmed.
If you just joined us, it's a special presentation on Utah Public Radio, COVID Conversation. We're talking with State Senator Lyle Hilliard and with Gordon Larson, who is the governor's policy director. You're welcome to join us with your question. A couple of ways you can do that. You can email us to upraxcess@gmail.com, 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 or you can call us toll-free, 800-826-1495, 800-826-1495. That's 800-826-1495. We did have a call from Chris in St. George. Here's the question he left us. He said he has a question about discrepancy in testing. Says yesterday the president said they tested over 10 million people. Then Dr. Birx said they had processed over 88,000 tests. And Chris wants to know how many tests are out there and an update on what the testing situation here is. So I don't know if you have national figures, Gordon Larson, but what about testing situation in Utah?
Sure. I don't have those national figures at my fingertips. I do know Utah has been consistently over the past week in the top five or six states in terms of per capita testing. So we've tested now, I think, as of yesterday, about 36,000 tests. And we were up to about 1,800 or so confirmed cases. So of the, and we've been, the other number that's been encouraging is that we consistently over the past month have been holding at about 5% of all the tests that we take are come back positive, which is encouraging. Some states have a much higher rate. But again, we've been ramping up. So I mentioned this earlier, but we've got fantastic partners in the private sector, including Intermountain Healthcare, University of Utah, two of our big four healthcare systems, some partners in Silicon Slopes, the tech community, as well as our own public health lab. And they've consistently ramped up their testing capability over the past several weeks. I think within another week or two, we'll be at about 7,000 tests per day as a capacity. So again, the key now is just driving people to go actually get tested. Sometimes that slows down over the weekend. So we should let listeners know that you can get tested any day of the week, including the weekend. So don't let Saturday or Sunday stop you from going to get tested if you have those symptoms and think you may have been exposed.
So I want to follow up with that. So if what are the guidelines, I guess, to when I reach out for a test? If I have symptoms, is that the guideline?
Yeah, and we should tell folks to go to coronavirus.utah.gov if you haven't. That will list for you the testing criteria. Early on, the criteria were kind of really restricted, and people who thought they might need to get tested were being turned around just because we didn't have enough tests, and that was the case across the country. And those since have been dramatically loosened up. So, again, the three symptoms that you should be looking for that are specific to COVID-19, a fever, a cough, and a shortness of breath, and particularly if you are in one of those vulnerable categories where you're 65 years of age or older, you've got some underlying conditions that can cause you to be immunocompromised. If you have diabetes, chronic kidney disease, some of those underlying health problems, and if you have any of those symptoms, you should go get tested. Now, if you think you've been exposed to somebody who is a confirmed case of COVID-19, the guidance is to self-monitor, self-isolate, and if you start showing symptoms, then immediately go get tested. But again, that and a lot more details are on the website, coronavirus.utah.gov.
Coronavirus.utah.gov. All right. So another question on testing. Is it Utah's goal? Do we want to get to where we can do the South Korea model, where we identify quickly cases quickly and then do tracing? Is that the goal? And if so, will we have the testing to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. So our goal has been to get to at least where we can do 7,000 or 8,000 tests per day. And right now we're very close to that. I think in the next week or two we'll be at that capacity. So you're absolutely right. Some of those Asian nations, and South Korea in particular, who had been through SARS and H1N1. We're just very well prepared for this, not only with the masks and the PPE and the social distancing and the hygiene, but also just with their contact tracing and testing capability. They jumped on that very quickly, and were able to get it under control very quickly and lower their mortality rate and their overall case numbers. And so that, you're absolutely right. That's the goal for Utah as well.
Do you think we're close to that? When do you think we'll get there?
Well, again, I think we're very close to having the capacity in terms of testing. The key is to get people tested. And I mentioned earlier in the program that the detective work that people like Lloyd and the other 12 local health departments throughout the state are doing, and maybe I'll just briefly reiterate that. What they do is when we have a confirmed case in that particular area, so for example, if you're in Logan and you go and get tested and it turns out you have COVID-19, then Lloyd's staff are going to ask you, where have you been in the past several days since you developed symptoms, and maybe even a little bit before you developed symptoms? Who did you have contact with? Were you traveling out of state? Who did you stay with? Anybody that was potentially exposed, and then they're going to go back and contact all those people and ask them if they're showing symptoms and if they need to isolate or go get tested. And so that detective work requires a lot of manpower, especially as we have more and more cases. And so we have several hundred Utah employees who volunteered to help with that effort and are getting trained. And every few days here, more of them come out of their training and go and help people like Lloyd and his staff do that detective work of that contact tracing and figuring out where anybody has been. Again, that's what some of the countries who have been very successful, like South Korea, have done, is that heavy contact tracing and testing model. And that's the direction Utah's going. Again, we have the capacity now to test many more people than we did even just a few weeks ago. And so the key is to identify people and encourage them to go get tested. Right now, it's primarily just been people self-selecting, right, saying, I think I have these symptoms. I'm going to go in and get tested, and that's great. But we also want people who may have been exposed and then start showing symptoms, go get tested immediately. You can, again, go to that website, coronavirus.utah.gov. You can call the hotline that it has on the website. You can chat with somebody on the website. You can find the testing locations. You can certainly do that as well through your provider. And again, the guidance that we've given all along is don't just show up at your doctor's office. You could potentially expose other people there. Call ahead, use telehealth, set up a time, and you may be able to go through a drive-through test or other locations that are near you. We have, I think, 30-plus testing locations throughout the state now as we've expanded. So the opportunity is there. Go ahead and go get tested.
And the central contact point, to tell us again, Gordon Larson?
Yeah, coronavirus.utah.gov.
Okay, coronavirus.utah.gov. Senator Hilliard, you had three questions that you're getting a lot, right? What about these new travel rules? Should I wear a mask? And how do I know if I'm an essential business? Have those questions been answered for you?
They have for me, and I really appreciated the governor's office because I forwarded a lot of those questions to them, and they've come back and helped give people the solace that we're not ignoring them. We're really trying to do this as fast as we can because it's new territory what we're doing. I should indicate I get a nightly email from our Senate staff updating me daily on what's happening in this area in the state of Utah. Anyone who'd like to be a part of that can just send me their email address, and I will include them. I will send that daily briefing. I think they'll find it pretty informative, and it's factual. It's not political. It's not emotional. It's pretty factual about what we're doing, what we're seeing. I think it'd be interesting if Gordon to talk about the future thing, about how prepared are we? Do we have enough masks? Do we have enough protective equipment? Do we have enough ventilators? How are we in the state of Utah to handle the surge that we hope we don't have?
Sure. So we think we're reasonably well prepared, but in terms of the personal protective equipment, there's as you can imagine, a huge demand worldwide for the few people that are manufacturing, the few companies that are manufacturing and distributing those supplies. And so we have a remarkable team of people that are vetting the different offers that come in for the state, whether it's doctor's offices or businesses who want to donate masks or gowns or gloves. As well as vendors who want to sell to us. And the challenge actually is that for every one good ballot offer that comes in, we have, 20 or so that may be fraudulent or just don't pan out. So it requires an enormous amount of kind of vetting to develop these reliable supply chains of masks and gowns and other supplies. Utah does have, we feel like we're in a good place in terms of our ICU beds. We have about 600 ICU beds throughout the state, each with a ventilator. And so we're preparing for the worst, but we think we're in a good place there. And I would also add that folks who think that they may have some ability to donate masks or other equipment that might be useful should also go to that website. There's a tab on the website on coronavirus.utah.gov that will allow people to donate or sell to the state equipment that might be useful. And while I'm mentioning that, it's probably also worth mentioning, Senator, that we have a need for healthcare workers who are willing to volunteer. If it does come to the worst case scenario that states like New York have seen, we have prepared expansion hospital sites where we would need healthcare workers to assist there as well. Again, we certainly hope that we don't get there. We're not planning on having that happen, but we're prepared for it in case that does happen. And that website, again, coronavirus.utah.gov, also has a portal where folks who have some healthcare experience, nurses or physicians or nurse anesthetists or CNAs, can fill out a form, and then someone will be in touch with them to assess their skill set and where they can best be used. If you are willing to donate blood, blood donations have dramatically dropped in the crisis, and hospitals are in need of blood donations. So you can volunteer to donate blood through coronavirus.utah.gov as well. So it's a website where it's kind of our central platform for a lot of the efforts that the public can help with.
Well, let's take another break. When we come back, we'll have a last segment here on this special presentation on Utah Public Radio. COVID conversation. We are talking with Senator Lyle Hilliard, and we're also talking with Gordon Larson, who's Utah Governor Gary Herbert's policy director. Your questions are welcome as well. upraxcess@gmail.com, upraxcess@gmail.com, or tell us how you're doing. 800-826-1495 is the toll-free number. You can get to us that way, 800-826-1495. Senator Hilliard, before we go to break, you mentioned newsletter information you could send out to people. Where should people send their email addresses to get on that list?
Send it to, this is all small letters, Lyle, L-Y-L-E, at hao-law.com. That will get to me.
Lyle at hao.law.com?
No, dash law.
Dash law. Okay. All right. We'll mention that again before the hour closes. Get the information from Senator Hilliard. Let's take a break. More on COVID conversation following this break.
Utah Public Radio hopes you will join us in thanking our sponsors, the many businesses we rely on, for their continued support of our mission to provide thoughtful and informative programming. Please stay informed, but also know that whenever you want to find the perfect oasis, UPR2, our online classical music station, is available at upr.org. The critical financial backing we receive from our business community means we can bring you the news updates and online classical music programming. And that's a wonderful thing, especially in these uncertain times. But what is certain? UPR's commitment to serve our listeners here and online at upr.org and through our UPR app.
Think back on all of the political coverage you have heard on this station in the past week. What does it all have in common? Our sources. We talk directly to the politicians on both sides of the aisle and beyond about healthcare, taxes, education, about the nature of democracy itself. Help support our mission to stand with the facts. Join the community of listeners who support this station for the very first time today. And thank you.
Make your donation to Utah Public Radio right now on our website, upr.org. Thank you for your support. Cache Valley Non-Denominational Sunrise Service is made possible by Cache Valley Mortuary, offering memorable remembrance experiences and celebrations of loved ones' lives, unique funeral services, and pre-planned options that help families through the grief and healing process. Located in Hyde Park. Information at cvmortuary.com.
Thanks for listening to COVID-19 Conversation, a special presentation on Utah Public Radio. A lot is going on, and we thought it would be a good opportunity to have a special program here. Freakonomics Radio will return next week in this hour. We're talking with State Senator Lyle Hilliard and with the governor's policy director, Gordon Larson. You're welcome to join us with your question about anything related to COVID-19, the coronavirus pandemic. A couple of ways you can do that. You can email us to upraxcess@gmail.com, upraxcess@gmail.com, or you can call us to the toll-free number, 800-826-1495, 800-826-1495. I want to mention a special program, two special programs coming up next week. You'll recall a couple of call-in specials, midday from American Public Media. They're doing it again. It's called Hard Questions, Real Answers. Last time they focused on health and questions directly relating to the virus. This time around, they're answering questions related to the economy. And so that'll be on Tuesday and Wednesday of next week. at noon, and you'll have an opportunity to call in for those programs as well. And to mention again, Senator Lyle Hilliard's newsletter that he sends out, the email information, you can email your email address to Senator Hilliard, lyle@hao-law.com. Did I get that right, Senator?
You did. All small letters.
Okay, all small letters. I want to start this segment. We just have about 9 minutes left in the conversation. Senator, at the beginning of the program, you said, you know, you had a bunch of questions from constituents. We want to get those questions answered. But I think you mentioned something that we're all concerned about. We all want to stay healthy, of course. We want to do the best we can there. But we want to come out of this with the economy intact as well. I wonder if you could talk about your concerns there and how best we do that.
Well, thank you. You know, we've handled the most important part. That's the health part. I'm glad we've done that. Let me just follow up with some of the things that we're doing as a, that I'm doing as a senator. First of all, we have weekly, usually two or three times a week, telephone calls of our Republican senator colleagues, and we talk about the issues. We're going to call ourselves into a special session probably next week, either Wednesday or Thursday, to address some of the immediate issues we have to address. And it looks like kind of an interesting thing. We're going to do it remotely. So I'm going to be sitting here at my home, and I'll be on the computer dealing with the Senate in Salt Lake. All of us will be. We can't be there because of how the logistics are set up and also the spacing. So what's going to happen is the House will meet at one time. They can't meet both together. House will go through their House bills. They will then send more to the Senate. We will then convene after them. We will handle our Senate bills and the House bills. Our Senate bills will then be sent to the House. Well, they'll convene later to take our bills and then any amendments we make of theirs. It could end up, if they amend any of our Senate bills, then we have to convene again. It's going to be a slow process, and we're putting I've been really impressed with our staff for putting this all together, but there are immediate issues that have to be resolved. And one really good one that's simple is the fact that we've always had our income tax filed by April 15th. That's been moved to July the 15th. And the problem that creates for the state economy is that our fiscal year ends June the 30th. So we usually count on that income tax money coming in April, and that then finishes our year out so that we're balanced the budget and can move into the next year on July 1st. That change means that we probably won't get the money that we normally get in. It'll come in the next fiscal year. So one of the first things we have to do is figure out a way, and we've got ways that we can transfer money that's set aside for different projects, pull it out, put it in to make sure our budget balances at the end of June, and then we're going to have to refill those places we've taken the money out of the money that comes in July. There's a lot of little tie-ins and issues with that, so as we work that thing through, we're going to have to hopefully get as much consensus as we can before we meet, and I'm sure we'll have a special session in May and probably in June as well as we work through these issues exactly where we're going to go. I know my experience is in dealing with the budgets and trying to put those things together. They're really complicated. Not only do you have the cash flow issue I just mentioned, but some people say, well, just use your rainy day fund. That's good. We probably and maybe will do it. But the trouble with a rainy day fund, it's one-time money, and that doesn't help with ongoing programs. And also about two-thirds of it is income tax money. And income tax money has to be used for public and higher education. So we have money sitting there that we could hopefully use for Medicaid or clean air or some of those issues that we tried to fund, but we can't spend it for it because it's dedicated on the Constitution to education. And so that really creates some logistics. And, you know, I look back, I almost say our economy is in a free fall as we're looking where the revenues. People are not driving as much, so there's less gas tax being paid. They're not buying as much in the stores, so there's less sales tax. And many of our people are not working. So there's not the income tax being paid. We don't know where we are on that. We're going to have to monitor that almost week by week to see where we are. And then we need to guess when this whole thing going to end. And if it keeps going like this for 3 or 4 months, we could be in really deep trouble in the budget things we've done. And then it becomes a real important thing that we sit down with each agency like we've done in the past. And I've been really involved in that in 9/11 and also the mortgage broke in 2008, being able to sit down with agencies and help them direct me on how we can spend less money because they have less money because the pressure will be on us to raise taxes. And that's just really not a good answer.
on the economy and the people are hurting as much as they are, I think you just simply raise taxes and cover the loss. It's going to be a very, very difficult situation to do. But again, I've been very impressed with state employees, their willingness to look tough at these issues, the state population willing to look at these issues as well and understanding the problem. So it's keeping me busy, and it's keeping, I think, legislators busy. I'm sure we're going to be doing this until we get to the solid point we feel that this is over with. But I think Lloyd Berenson hit the nail on the head. We don't know. It may subside in June with warmer weather. We may be back into it in the fall, and we may have mutations of the virus. That means the drugs that we've been working on, vaccinations, are not working. I think we're coming a wake-up call that our health is very important. There's things we need to do, but also we need to be interested in the economy and how that really impacts all of us. And some of the really vital government services we all have come to rely on and are very important. So it's all a big mishmash of what we're trying to do. And I hold my breath and say, here we go again. And again, people working together, trying to do a very complex issue and making it all work out together.
Yeah, that's the key. You work together, right? I just have about 3 minutes left in the program. Sandra in Spanish Fork has called in. She asked two questions. So I'll direct this to Gordon Larson. Senator, jump in if you'd like as well. Here's what Sandra asks. How important is it when we go to the grocery store or have to go to the post office that we wear a mask? So that's the first question. Second question is, and some people are afraid to even go outside their door. The virus isn't going to travel from one block to another, is it? So those are Sandra's questions.
Sure. So on the mask, and those are related questions. So on the mask question, it is a great idea to wear a mask wherever you go. We're wearing them around the office now. Anytime we're around other people, we wear a mask. And the purpose kind of shifts a little bit when you have widespread mask sharing, as opposed to the mask kind of protecting the person who's wearing it from other people. It protects when everybody's wearing one, then it actually ends up kind of protecting everybody else from each other, right? And so I think that's something that you'll start to see more and more of when you go out and you're in the grocery store or other public places. And that's a good thing. It probably takes a little bit of getting used to, but it doesn't have to be a medical grade I-90 or a N95 mask. A homemade mask is great, even if it's just a bandana that you put around your mouth. That protects when you cough or you sneeze, that your sneeze cloud doesn't, you know, hang there and potentially get somebody else sick. So I think that's something we'll see more and more of, and it's a sign that people are taking it seriously. Now, she's absolutely right. You walk out your door, it's not like this is an airborne in the sense that it's floating around in the air kind of thing. It's the primary mode of transmission is two things: people breathing in the droplets of somebody that they're very close to within six feet of for an extended period of time, and that person coughs or sneezes, and they breathe, and then the person who contracts it through breathing in those droplets. And then the other way is just people touching surfaces and then touching their face. And so it's helpful to be cognizant of that. Let's touch our faces less. Let's wear masks more. And certainly, if you're sick, then stay home.
Well, if you both are able to stay, we'll stay a little couple minutes over the top of the hour here. We do have another question that I'd like to address here. Let's see, Bernadette in Rockville called, said Randy Hopkins is running. In the second congressional district race, has 34 years of workforce services, and this is a political endorsement. I'll get that on in a different segment when we'll probably open that up for listeners at some point. So just some final words here. Starting with Gordon Larson, I understand the state plan came out in phases. We're still in phase one, are we? And what can we expect?
Yeah, no, that's right. And again, that's the Utah Leads Together plan. It's up on that website again, utah.coronavirus.gov. And it does lay out those three phases. The first phase is the urgent phase, where we are encouraging this kind of extreme social distancing. Second phase is stabilization, and we're able to kind of lift some of those measures and start getting back to business. And then the third phase is the recovery phase. And And so as long as we're in that urgent phase, that is where we still strongly encourage people to be very diligent about avoiding contact with other folks. And if you do need to go to work and you can't telecommute or find other ways to do it, then find creative ways within your workplace of social distancing. But again, that's the urgent phase. The stabilization phase is what will come next, and then the recovery phase where we'll start to see our economy get back to business.
All right, Senator Hilliard, we give you the last word in the program today.
Thank you, Tom. I think the word I'd have is this is serious. And I think some people, you don't see the virus, you may get symptoms and not really realize what you're having, and you happen to be in a condition you can handle it. But boy, I'll tell you, the things I've heard from people who are vulnerable who get this, it is really serious. And I think we all have a concern that not only for our own health, but that we don't contaminate or hurt somebody else. So I think that's really important. I think the other thing is to understand the background is going on and working. I think Lloyd Bjornson hit it, Gordon hit it. We have a lot of state employees who are out there working, a lot of volunteers who are working, trying to alleviate the problem. So we're doing well, and we're doing well because of that. And I don't think that should minimize in our own mind, oh, there really isn't a problem. I mean, there's a lot of good hard work that's being done. And I think on my Senate position, looking at budgets and being concerned about how we're going to fund these and protect these frontline workers and protect people who with this illness will be really a demand that I'm going to be involved for, I'm sure, the next 3 or 4 months and probably a lot of different special session meetings, other meetings to make sure we have money to fund some of the costs that we're incurring.
Well, we thank everybody for participating today. Thanks our listeners for their great questions. We'll continue to provide special programming for you. As I mentioned, coming up next week, Tuesday and Wednesday of next week, that special from APM, Hard Questions, Real Answers, focusing on the economy, 2 days worth of call-in programming, noon each day, Tuesday and Wednesday of next week. And we've got a lot of special programming in our news and on Access Utah as well. And we'll do these special programs as needed. You've been listening to COVID-19 Conversation. We thank Lloyd Bjornson from the Bear River Health Department joining us earlier. And we thank Gordon Larson, Utah Governor Kerry Herbert's policy director, for joining us. Thank you.
Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it.
You bet. And Senator Lyle Hilliard, thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks, everybody, for listening to COVID-19 Conversation today.
This is Utah Public Radio, statewide member-supported service of Utah State University and the College of Humanities and Social Sciences. KUSR Logan, KUSK Vernal, KUSO Richfield, KUST Moab, KCEU Price, KUSU FM Logan, also heard online at upr.org and on the UPR app.
And next up, Utah News and Here and Now here on Utah Public Radio. Stay with us. Thanks for listening to our special program, COVID-19 Conversation. Freakonomics will be back next week.